And we are on air on Panther Racing Radio. And tonight we are doing our Road America and Irwindale NASCAR Race Review. And, of course, Hot Topic Sound Off will start at 10 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. Joining me as co-host for tonight is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Happy to be here. Always a pleasure to talk about some great racing. And we had plenty of that over this past 4th of July weekend. Hope everybody had a safe and enjoyable holiday there with the family.
Yes, indeed. Our thoughts and prayers, of course, are with the victims from Highland Park. I was in the Chicago area over this weekend, and unfortunately, I was in the Highland Park on Friday night. And it was kind of scary to hear the news on Sunday morning. My daughter come back from the parade in her community, and the 4th of July parade, and it hit just a little bit too close to home this time around.
Certainly, we've been through that, and you're right. Our thoughts and prayers are with the families of those affected by that and the entire country as we have to go through this yet again.
Yes, indeed. Tonight, though, we are going to do our NASCAR race review. We're going to start in the first half hour with some short track news, followed by the Omaha series at Irwindale Speedway. And then we'll review some ARCA Menards and ARCA East Series updates. In the second half hour, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern, we do have some post-race audio from the NASCAR Cup Series first-time winner, Tyler Reddick. Jay, we're getting some background noise here.
Okay.
At 9 o'clock, we do have some post-race audio from the NASCAR Cup Series first-time winner, Tyler Reddick. He's the driver of the number 8 Richard Childress Racing Chevrolet. And afterward, we'll offer some updates from the NASCAR Truck Series. They did not race this past weekend. In our final half hour for our review show, we will review both the Xfinity and the Cup Series races at Road America. Lots to talk about there. And some of that might even lead into our Hot Topic Sound Off discussion starting at 10 p.m. with our Fan for Racing crew. And I believe Tommy Kraft is joining us for that conversation.
Well, you're most certainly right. As I mentioned, some great racing. You said it, another first-time career, first-time winner in the Cup Series, but that brings about a discussion. And then when we talk about the race winner and some of the events from the Xfinity Series race, I think that brings up some other hot topics that we'll get to. So it certainly does fuel the last half hour of the show.
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with the short track racing news. I want to start with the SRX series because they did race this past weekend out at Stafford Motor Speedway, and they sent us some post-race notes here. Ryan Newman landed the victory in Victory Lane Saturday night at Stafford Motor Speedway. He earned his first win of the 2022 SRX season. He finished heat one in seventh place, followed by a sixth place finish in heat two. And for the 75-lap main event, Newman started the race from the ninth spot and made a late race pass to score the win. Marco Andretti finished second, followed by Paul Tracy in third. Ryan Hunter-Reay won heat one, and Bobby Labonte won heat two. So if you want to go through the running order here, I know they have quotes here, but if you want to do the running order of how they finished all the way through to, I guess, well, they do get through the 12th place, actually.
Yeah, you mentioned there Ryan Newman, your winner, Marco Andretti, Paul Tracy, Tony Stewart, Bobby Labonte, Haley Deegan, your top six out of the 12. Then you got Ryan Hunter-Reay, a local driver there, Matt Hirschman, Justin Marks, Greg Biffle, Bill Elliott, and Michael Waltrip. And I know on our preview show, we talked about the highlights of some of these drivers participating in it. And congratulations to Ryan Newman to be running real well. He was leading the points coming into it, pick up the victory. We saw he was there with his girls. and some of the team people he mentioned in his post race, Bruton Smith, and trying to think of the other one. Give me a second here. Let me scroll back up there. I know he mentioned too that he felt on his heart picking up that victory. Mm-hmm. Bruton Smith family, and then
Ryan Clausen.
I'm not. There we go. Thank you. That's right. That was one that he always raced within his heart as well. So I thought that was really humble victory. It was great to see him with his girls, and a really special victory for Ryan Newman.
Yes, indeed. It definitely was. Now, the next race for the SRX, the Camping World SRX Series, now heads to Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway for a race this Saturday night, July the 9th. Local ringer Cole Williams is going to join Tony Stewart, Marco Andretti, Greg Biffle, Ryan Garay, Bobby Lamani, Ryan Newman, Paul Tracy, Michael Waltrip, Tony Kanaan, Helio Castroneves, Matt Kenseth, and Nashville native Joseph Newgarden will be part of the action that kicks off at 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS and will also stream live on Paramount Plus. So the SRX only has 6 races. I believe Stafford was, what, the 3rd or 4th race, you know?
I want to say 3rd. It might have been the 4th. Let me see if it says that in there. Let's see. I know they're at least halfway, so it was either the 3rd or 4th race.
Yeah, I think they're really close to the halfway mark. For the season. If that was not the halfway mark, I believe there's 3 more races. Stafford is the halfway mark.
Okay, I think you are correct there. Talking about though going to Nashville, that's super exciting. The two you mentioned there, Cole Williams and Joseph Newgardner from the Nashville area. Cole Williams is one I have seen drive there in the All-American 400 asphalt race there for the late models. Excellent opportunity for Cole.
Yes, indeed. It's going to be kind of on the big stage for Cole Williams there racing with the SRX Series out at Nashville, so that's pretty exciting. It really is a big weekend of racing in Nashville this weekend because in addition to the SRX, there's going to be the Master of the Pros and quite a few different series racing this weekend out at Nashville.
Well, and we know that's why the Cup Series wanted to come in there, whether it be at the Fairgrounds or the Super Speedway, that being a great marketplace, and they have definitely supported all levels of racing here at this point. So I think we're only going to see that grow, and you're going to see some more names come out of there and see some bigger highlights from the Nashville area as that continues to explode.
Definitely. So any other things that you want to hit on here in the Racing America news from this weekend?
No, I think we pretty much covered that. I know you had put up some notes, too, from Atlanta. I don't know if those came from Racing America or not. But we can move down to those if you'd like.
Okay, yes. I did post some notes from Atlanta Motor Speedway. Let me go to my notes here. Atlanta Motor Speedway had a lot of racing take place this past weekend. And the Outlaws division came into championship night with the tightest battle at the top of the standings. Georgia driver Bryce Sanders began the night with a 13-point lead on the division, and Neil Doolin from Harrisburg, North Carolina, right behind him. But Doolin started the race in fourth position and remained in front of the pack for the rest of the race. However, Sanders was even more impressive, leading a handful of laps and earning a second-place result. Ultimately, that was enough for Sanders to stay atop of the point standings and become the division champion. Kyle Bacon from Buchanan, Georgia, made a slick pass for the lead early in the race and held on to win for the second time. So, That was
the
cool.
The reason we talk about these divisions and these drivers, these are the names you're going to see down the road. I know down further we'll get to the Bandoleros. We know how many of the top NASCAR drivers have come out of the Bandoleros. So you're going to see some of these names start creeping up into the NASCAR East and West Series, ARCA Menard Series, and on up. So get invested in and watch these guys now, because you're going to see their name down the road.
Absolutely. Now, like I had many times this summer, Beckman Malone from Rock Hill, South Carolina, and Nicholas Denton from Pascagoula, Mississippi, went on to battle in the final Bandits feature of the series. Denton, who started on the pole, claimed the lead immediately to begin the race. In hot pursuit, Malone began to plot his move for the lead right away. The two exchanged the lead back and forth for the entirety of the race, but it was Denton to make the most important pass of the night and drive up into victory lane. In addition to being crowned a Round 8 feature winner, Denton solidified the season championship as well, winning his fourth race of the season. Let's go down and give the running order for the Associates Group, Young Lions, and on down here, because we're going to run out of time.
All right. You mentioned the Associates Group Young Lions. You got Josh Dickens, comes out of Miami, Florida. Gianni Esposito out of Decatur, Georgia. Garrett Irwin out of Covington, Georgia. Lanny Bruce Boos out of Locust Grove, Georgia. And then Sean McElhaney out of Babylon, New York. That was your top five there. The top five in the Byron Power Sports Semi-Pro, Luke Yarbrough comes from right there in Milton, Georgia. Out of Marietta, Georgia is Donovan Strauss. Dawson Sutton comes out of Lebanon, Tennessee. And then a pair of Georgia drivers in fourth and fifth, you got Jonathan Taylor from Roswell and Michael Gannon from Canton. Let's see, under the WJP Investment Pros, there we got a mixture. Landon Rapp is your points leader from Concord, North Carolina. Gavin Graham comes out of Lakeland, Florida. Jensen Jorgensen out of Stockbridge, Georgia. Cale Hall out of Griffin, Georgia. And then Timothy Watson in the fifth spot comes out of Panama City, Florida. Let's see, the Masters. There we got Joey Clanton out of Brooks, Georgia. Bill Plemons Jr., another one out of Locust Grove, Georgia. Out of McDonough, Georgia is Robbie Woodall. And then Philip Young, out of Dallas, Georgia. And Athens, Georgia driver Mark Swan is their top five there. The Bandits. Here you got Pascagoula, Mississippi driver Nicholas Denton as your leader. You mentioned Beckham Malone, Rocks Hill, South Carolina. From Huntington, New York, in the third spot is Darren Krantz, Jr. Austin Bloodworth comes out of McIntyre, Georgia. And then Waynesboro, Virginia provides our fifth place driver, Wyatt Coffey. And under the Bandoleros, I mentioned the Freight Auctions rookie Bandoleros, Wyatt Youngblood out of Concord, Georgia. Leading, Emma Teal out of Monticello, Georgia. Javier Soto out of Marietta, Georgia. Lexi Hayes out of Locust Grove, Georgia. And Topher Allman in the fifth spot comes from Moreland, Georgia. Top five there. How many more we got here? Let's see if I get through two more.
There's two more.
The Outlaws. Kyle Bacon mentioned out of Buchanan, Georgia. Bryce Sanders out of Ola, Georgia. Carter Erickson out of Cumming, Georgia. Baylor O'Neill from Grantville, Georgia. And Connor Butler from Forsyth, Georgia. Your top five there. And then the last group is called the Chargers. Griffin, Georgia, Coleman Moody, C.J. Almond, listed from Atlanta, Brody Graham out of Flowery Branch, Georgia, David Anderson out of Buford, Georgia, and Travis Streetman out of Ellaville, Georgia, are your top five in that class. So, again, look for some of these names to be popping up throughout other series, whether it be in the late models or on up.
Yes, indeed. So congratulations to all of those drivers. I thought it was noteworthy to kind of bring those up. As Jay mentioned, so many of those drivers move on to the ARCA Menard series and then the Truck series or Xfinity series. And ultimately, they move on to the,
Cup level, the Premier Series.
Cup Series, yeah. That's what I'm trying to get out. Okay, now, Jake Drew had another win this past weekend out at Irwindale Speedway, making it three straight wins for this driver from Sunrise Racing. So he's 22 years old, from Fullerton, California, making a statement. And for anybody who felt inclined to discredit his pair of victories in the previous two ARCA West wins, they were shortened races. He pretty much dominated the Napa Auto Parts 150 and picked up his third straight West Series victory. Unofficially, he led all 154 laps.
Well, and I feel like maybe he's been listening to our show, Sharon. We talk about how competitive and close the points are in the West Series year in and year out, and he is trying to dispel that as he is building a points gap. You mentioned it, picking up his third victory in a row, top five finish in all six races so far. He's going to be tough to beat, and he's going to win by a margin this year, I think.
Yes, indeed. He won two road course races at Portland International Raceway on June 4th, and the second win was at Sonoma Raceway on June 11th. Both of those wins came in races that were shortened, the first one by weather conditions and the second one because of time constraints. So Saturday night's race is on the half-mile oval out of Irwindale, California. He was able to go the full distance, and nobody in the field had anything for him. Drew entered Saturday's night's race with a 35-point advantage over Todd Souza in the West Series standings. Last season, he lost a tiebreaker to champion Jesse Love when the two finished the West Series finale at Phoenix Raceway tied in points, but Love won that tiebreaker. So, it's a little bit of a redemption for Jake Drew to come up with that win this year. It also makes him the first driver to collect three consecutive West Series checkered flags since Todd Gilliland won four West races in a row in 2017. Gilliland won his second consecutive West Series championship that season. So pretty cool to see that happen. The rest of the finishing order here, Cole Moore finished second to Drew. That tied his best career result, but he also finished second when the West Series raced at Irwindale in March. So he'd like to do better than that the next time they come back. Trevor Huddleston, who is a multi-time track champion at Irwindale and the son of track promoter Tim Huddleston, finished third Saturday night, and at various points in the race, he appeared to be the only driver able to run with Drew at the front of the field. Kyle Keller and Landon Lewis finished out the top five. Then it was Jack Bench, Tanner Wright, Sebastian Arias, Amber Slagle, and Souza rounding out the top 10. So that's pretty cool. I know we've got some notes from the ARCA Menard series as well, if you want to start going down the list there, Jay. Maybe do
okay,
two, and then I'll do two.
Not sure where you're looking at there for the main ARCA Menard series, if that's what you're...
I was looking at the recap.
Okay, I must be on a different page of notes than what you sent me. I got the West series still up here. Whoops.
Well, that is the West Series.
Oh, okay. You're still – okay. Sorry. I'm talking about other drivers that – the season that Jake Drew is having, but some of these others having a very good year. Sebastian Aries qualified a career best fourth and scored his second career top 10 finish in eighth, tying his previous career best also set earlier this season at Irwindale. And I think I missed the one on Jake Finch. He made his West Series debut driving for his father, James Finch, Phoenix Racing Team, and finished the race in sixth. Now, Phoenix Racing has won 10 times in the Arca Menard Series over the years, and they include drivers such as Jeff Purvis, Andy Hillenberg, and Casey Roddick. So look for that team to continue building on that momentum.
Amber Slagle finished ninth, her best career West finish. She finished 10th at Kern County Park, Raceway Park, in April. And Todd Souza finished 10th after getting tangled with Joey East late in the race. Souza dropping the series standings down to fourth.
You mentioned Jake Drew with the now the 45-point lead, but Moore moved into the second position as he jumped two spots with his runner-up finish, leapfrogging past Tanner Reif, and who is in third, and then Todd Souza, who mentioned, dropped from second to fourth. PJ Pedrinacilli jumped one position into the fifth spot. Now the next race next race up for the Arca Menard Series West schedule, that'll be at Evergreen Speedway, will be the 1,000th race in West Series history, dating back to the first race at Oakland Speedway, March 28, 1954. That race was won by Dick Rathman, his only career West Series win. The Evergreen 150 at Evergreen Speedway is set for Saturday, August 20th. We'll get more on that as we get closer, but it'll be at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, and that one will be streamed live on Flow Racing.
Okay. The West Series point standings, we referenced it a little bit, the 45 advantage of Jake Drew over Cole Moore. Tanner Rice, just 4 points behind Moore in third place, and then 1 point behind him is Todd Souza in fourth place, and Paul Pedrincelli, 13 points back from Souza in fifth place. The next five drivers are Joey East, Takuma Koga, Bridget Burgess, Austin Herzog, and Paul Pedrincelli. Now, the only drivers that have raced all six races in the West, Austin Herzog has only five of those six races, is the only driver in the top 10 who has raced all six races. So it's still going to be a lot of fun to watch this series.
It is. As you were going down the points there, the rest of them from second through about seventh, still pretty tight-knit. They're a few points between each position, but still within range, minus, again, Jake Drew kind of pulling away here with that third victory on the year. So definitely want to keep an eye on the West Series. Somebody else would have to get on a pretty hot streak, though, I think, to catch Jake Drew.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's really on a hot streak. Now, you mentioned the next race for the Arca Menard Series West. The next race is here for the Arca Menard Series is actually coming up this coming weekend. The Dawn 150 will take place on July the 8th. 5 p.m. Eastern at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. So it's another road course coming up here for the Arca Menard Series. That will be televised on F1. We'll talk more about that race on Thursday night's show. And then that is also a two Chief Showdown event. One race, but two different series earning points. So we talked about the Arca West racing at Evergreen in August. The next race for the Arca East isn't until August the 28th at 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern out at the Milwaukee Mile. That one will be televised on MAV TV. And, again, we've got a ways to go for these August races because we're just getting started here in July. I can't wait to see this Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course race this weekend.
That one should definitely be interesting. And while we're talking about it, to throw the highlight in there for the Arkham Menards East Series, Sammy Smith is your points leader there. He also has three victories on the year, has built up a 27-point lead over Taylor Gray, who also has a victory and four top tens in the five races, but he is 27 points behind. Then you got Leland Honeymoon is 31 back, only four back, though, from Taylor Gray. Stephanie Moyer, all five races made so far with one top 10, is at minus 73. Brad Smith at minus 76. And then we got a few drivers that haven't made all the starts, 6th through 10th. Christian Rose, we've had him on, I believe, a couple times here on Fan for Racing. Jake Finch, mentioned that was his first West start. He's got three starts in the East Series, all three of them being top 10s. Donald Thiege out of Canada, also all three top 10s. And then your 9th and 10th place, Connor Jones. Someone put the first name. Yeah, make sure I got that. It's Connor Jones. He's in the 9th spot, having made two starts, both of them top fives. And then Jonathan Schaefer also with two starts, both of them being top 10s. And a slide over here to the main Arkham Menards standings. Again, we got them coming up at the Mid-Ohio. And that will also tie into, as Sharon mentioned, the Sioux Chief Showdown. So I don't know why the ARCA page there doesn't seem to be updating that Sioux Chief. I'll pull that up in a minute. Or if Sharon, if you can pull that up, it doesn't seem to update that.
Let me go back and see if I can get that.
Not quite halfway through the main Arkham Menards series, Rajah Caruth, no wins, but four top fives and six top tens, holds a five-point advantage over teammate Nick Sanchez, who's got two victories, two top fives and six top tens, but he's 5 points back. And then Daniel Dye, another one we talk a lot about here. I think that name's going to become more and more popular. He's 9 points back with four top fives and six top tens in the 8 starts. Tony Breidinger also has 8 starts, but only 3 top tens, putting her 54 back. Greg Van Alst, 5 top tens, is at minus 58. Amber Balcain at minus 65. Zachary Tinkle is 107 back. Brad Smith, the last driver with all 8 starts made in the 8th position, at minus 110. Then you got Sammy Smith, and we saw him in the Xfinity Series here. We'll talk about that a little bit here in a minute. 4 starts, 2 victories, all 4 top fives, gets him into the 9th position. And then D.L. Wilson rounding out the top 10 at minus 175.
Okay, for your 2022 Sioux Chief Showdown, after 4 events, including Phoenix, Iowa, Berlin, and Elko, Sammy Smith is your points leader at 169 points, followed by Jesse Love at 152, Taylor Gray at 149, and this is where it really starts to get tight. He's only 3 points behind Jesse Love. Rajah Caruth is at 148. In 4th place, and Nick Sanchez is actually tied with Daniel Dye at 145 points. Tony Breidinger is 7th. She's at 129 points. Greg Van Alst sits in 8th place at 116 points. And then it's Amber Balcain in 9th place at 108 points. And Brad Smith sits in the 10th spot at 101 points. The next race, Mid-Ohio, as the road course, is going to be the pin races for the Sioux Chief Showdown. So that's going to be the halfway point for this particular series. We'll see if anybody can close that gap on Sammy Smith.
Well, and before we move on here, that's the interesting thing about that. Mentioned Sammy Smith only having 4 starts of the 8 for the Arkham Menards series. They are the Sioux Chief Showdowns, and he's making the most of them. 2 victories, has that points lead because he's not eligible to run the whole season. So that's good to see that. A championship within the main championship, giving some other drivers
exactly
that opportunity.
Exactly right. It's a great experience for these drivers that are not eligible to race the entire season. They can still go for that Sioux Chief Showdown Championship and get some experience in that series racing with some experienced drivers. Okay, we're going to move on now to our post-race audio from Tyler Reddick. He won for the first time in the NASCAR Cup Series this past weekend. It was a big win for Tyler Reddick, who drives the number 8 number 2 Childress Racing Chevrolet. So I'm going to go ahead and bring up that audio now. We'll listen to it. And then afterward, Jay and I will give our commentary. So here we go.
With our post-race correspondent here at Breeding Market for Shea Quick Trip 250. Headed by Jockey here with now our race winner, Tyler Reddick, who we could call the man of the hour, but I think it's been a little bit more than an hour now. So congratulations, Tyler. We know this one's been a long time coming, but one specifically your team has been, you know, searching for and hoping for many races, but especially this year after a lot of runner-up finishes in different situations with kind of heartbreak finishes there at the end. Just tell us what it felt like to not only win today, but be able to come off that final turn and see the checkered flag and know what that felt like for you inside the car as well.
It was just a huge sense of relief. This whole team, we've been at it for a couple of years now together, and even some of us back to Xfinity Series days, you know, and that first year together in Xfinity Series, we were able to go out, back up, you know, championship, win a lot of races, and then we got thrust into the reality of what cup racing is like, and I've had to learn a lot over the course of the last 3 years in the Cup Series as a driver. But I've had some really great people behind me to help me do that. Whether that was, you know, my crew chief, Josh Wise, Curtis Walls, just a lot of great people, you know, getting a lot of time at Chevrolet and the simulator to work on my driving style and just my habits, my mistakes, whatever it might be. A lot of great people have helped an immense amount along the way. And just what a crazy ride it's been. Just had to put a lot into it. All of us have, and it's really nice to get it finally done.
All right, we're now going to go to questions. We're going to start with Dustin here in the back.
I mean, it certainly does. You know, he's been the guy that's won more road courses the last couple of years than anybody. You know, and then you look at who's behind him, Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, guys that have been really good on road courses. And, I mean, we've been right there with them a lot of the time, the last, say, 2 years. You know, it's just sometimes our agendas have been different. We were here last year, we were having to go after points, and we had to stay out. It was nice to get those stage wins, stage points. But, you know, it really put a dampener on us being able to go out and battle with guys like Chase, who won this race last year, and some of those guys that, you know, were able to really battle up at the end of these road course races. So it's kind of, in some way, nice to be in the spot that we were, where points really weren't going to matter that much over the next 10 races. We knew that we need to go out there and win. And so it just kind of put points aside and put the whole day together like we did and not make big mistakes, just execute all day long. It was nice to be able to coming off pit road, right there on the bumper of the 9 car, and just me and him go at it, and may the best team win, and thankfully it was us to win. Thank you.
Okay, Daniel, go ahead.
Yeah, good. Tyler, what was the last lap like for you? Also, has anyone told you that Austin Dillon had a mechanical problem?
Yeah, I finally heard about that. I think Richard's the first one that told me, actually. That was crazy, but I'm glad it. I'm glad it didn't bring a caution out, for sure. But, I mean, hey, I would have been ready for it, honestly.
What was the last
five? You know, the last five were pretty nice. I'd say from that 10 to 5 range when Chase was kind of closing back in and right there, I was kind of searching within myself what I needed to be doing. That was probably the most stressful part. because, you know, he could kind of get away. He would kind of close back in. And I was kind of worried about my brakes fading late, and they kind of would late in a tire run. But up until that point in the tire run late, I'd been behind somebody else, or I'd been on the bumper of another guy, whatever it be, kind of in dirty air, warmer air, more turbulent air. And that definitely has a factor on, or plays a factor in how your tire temperatures would be, your brake temperatures would be, even your engine temperatures would be. So being in front, I kind of was playing it a little too safe, honestly, and I realized that my brakes, my car was good, and I could push a little bit harder and brake myself again, and that allowed me to get out to a company. So my laps were pretty stress-free. It was really nice to know that I had that much left in the tank in the car to be able to pull them off and have that gap and then manage it. Sounds crazy, but I honestly thought that's where the first one would come last year. Honestly, you know, I thought last year would come here. We had a good speed of Coda last year. The rain coming in really kind of was an awful. I wasn't expecting. You know, we got the pull in the dry there, Coda, and then it was just a downpour all day on that Sunday a year ago. It was really disheartening for me because I had a lot yet to learn in damp conditions. And then the other road courses that we got to that came here last year, I mean, not just the wind. So, I felt good about our road courses where we were with the last car. And then we had the Charlotte Roval test in, like, October, whatever it was. We were really strong, so I felt really good about our chances this year on road courses, too.
All right. So, it's Steve here, and then to Lee.
Steve, sorry, you said
He's always had a lot of confidence in me, but you know, it seems like a place like this, it was obvious last year we had good speed. Circumstances just kind of played its part, but you know, a lot of the road courses this year, even you know, Coda, we ran up at the front and led late. And I thought Coda, honestly, you know, from the drop of the green, we missed it. We weren't as good as we should have been. Yeah, the whole team knew that, unfortunately. But today was a different story. We unloaded in practice. We were strong, and in qualifying we were strong. Just as the race was unfolding, we were in a lot of dirty air for the most part. We were able to stay close where other cars would kind of drop off after 5-6 laps. We could stay right there. That told me we had a great car. And I guess anyways, yes, you know, he had a lot of confidence coming into the day. I had a lot of confidence in the car. You know, I was just, you know, stressed and worried about how the race would play out, if we would have any hiccups, but thankfully we didn't, and things went our way.
Okay, we'll go ahead and end it there. Jay, your comments, your thoughts after listening to Tyler Reddick in this interview.
Well, and mixing that in with what I heard on Race Hub as well, the first thing is that, you know, the confidence they had, and I didn't realize how, disappointed they felt with Coda, that they really felt they had a shot at Coda. I know I heard the crew chief interview saying that really was their goal coming here to Road America, was not worry about stage points. Their entire strategy was going to be winning the race. But then, too, he mentioned those last few laps, going toe-to-toe with Chase Elliott, obviously considered one of the best right now in this era on a road course, of all that stress and everything else kind of going away and just going toe-to-toe with one of the best, good, clean racing. I know he mentioned not getting worried about there possibly being a caution. We always hear drivers talk about that. They start hearing and feeling things are going to go wrong, that they're not going to get that victory he's come so close to. For him to say, hey, I'm glad they didn't say anything because it would have just been that one more thing in my mind. But the way it sounded there, he really had put everything else behind and was just focused on those final few laps. And he said not pushing it, he felt like maybe he left something on the table. I know during the race we heard Richard Childress actually tell him not to use his stuff up, push Chase Elliott to use his up. So, like I said, I mean, mm-hmm. different strategies and things that are going through your mind. You know, he's doing that, but then he's thinking, oh, I still got something left. I'm not going hard enough. You know, it's what they say, closing a race. You know, you can run good all day, but you've got to close it out. and we have seen him come so close. It was so cool to see him get a victory.
Well, and I think all of that plays into what he talked about, the reality of coming to the Cup Series and how difficult it is to make that transition, because so many of these drivers are so used to going out there and just going all out and going after that win. It is so hard for them to learn how to manage the race, because it's a different animal, if you will, when you're talking about the Cup Series, where it's more of an endurance race that you have to learn how to manage your car to be there at the end. And I think that's what Richard Childress was getting at too. Make Chase Elliott use her car, don't use up your car. So those are hard lessons for some of these drivers when they're coming into the Cup Series. But I think that he listened to his mentor and his boss, Richard Childress, there, and did exactly what he needed to do in order to win that race. So it was really good to see Tyler Reddick finally get that breakthrough win.
It was, and you're right. And it's a tough balance, though, too. I say I compare him to Kyle Larson. I know is one that we've seen at the Cup level. Noah Gregson on the Xfinity side, and Tyler Reddick, especially when the championship race used to be at Miami Homestead. To run good and fast, you had to be up on the wall. In the closing laps, if you got a 5-second lead, do you tell them to come off the wall and run a little less hard? But that's what they're used to. That's their level of comfort. But it can also bite him. So it's finding that balance, you know, and he mentioned that he said he was checking up a little bit, but also felt like he was leaving something on the table as Elliott was catching him. So he's like, you know, that torn between what to do.
But he did the right thing, and he was able to come up with that victory. And it's a hard lesson, because if you think about racing, especially young racers, that's the mentality, is to go out there and give it everything you've got in order to get that win. But in the Cup Series, you have to learn how to manage that car. And it's a little bit different kind of racing that they do at the Cup Series level, with knowing how to manage the car to be there at the end. And again, it was a breakthrough win for Tyler Reddick. First one's the hardest. So hopefully we'll see him have more wins down the road here.
And you're right, especially these drivers that we talk about running different series and different styles of cars. If you go to a short track, that is what that all is all about. The Cup level is the premier level of the NASCAR series for that reason. Talk about some of these longer races, the endurance of it, not just as a driver, but the vehicle. And you mentioned it, of managing your car, managing your tires, managing the strategy of how it plays out. So it does come, and that's why it is the premier series.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's why those are the best races in NASCAR at the Cup Series level. That's why I'm never really in favor of shortening the races, because I think that's part of what the Cup Series is all about. And I do think that NASCAR has been very, what's the word I want to use here? They've been very discriminating, maybe, in the races that they have shortened. I think they've made good decisions about the races that they have shortened and still keeping the spirit of the series intact. So I'm not necessarily against shortening the races, but I do think the spirit of the series needs to remain intact.
Well, we're certainly treading on one of those topics we may have to bring up later on in the program under Hot Topics, but you're right. NASCAR trying to find that balance of keeping fans engaged. You know, and I know they've tested different things during different races with that, doubleheader weekends, two races in the same weekend for that same reason, giving the fans what they want, the most bang for their buck, but also, as you mentioned, keeping the Cup Series as the premier series. The longer races, there's a reason it's the top level.
Exactly right. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on now to the Truck Series, the NASCAR Truck Series. They did not race this week, and in fact, they've been on a little bit of a break. Their last race was at Nashville Super Speedway on June 24th. The next race, though, is coming up next weekend, so we'll preview this coming up on Thursday. Their next race will be the O'Reilly Auto Parts 150 at Mid-Ohio this coming weekend, Saturday, July the 9th at 1:30, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So it'll be fun to see the Truck Series back on track. But let's quickly go over their driver points and where they stand, just to refresh everybody's memory on this. And by the way, Zane Smith is probably going to be the pre-race audio that we will have for this coming Thursday night. So I can't wait to see what he has to say.
All right. Well, I know he is the points leader, and I am trying to get that pulled up real quick as we look at their schedule and what they got coming up. I did want to let you know I looked up the SRX. They do have three races left. It'll be, I don't remember, Nashville, I-55 Speedway in Peavely, Missouri, and then Shannon Speedway as their finale there for the SRX when we were talking about that. So they do have three races in and three races to go yet.
Okay, I was thinking this was the midway point, so thank you, Jay.
All right, now, if this loads up here. Mentioned Zane Smith is your points leader, having three victories and 21 playoff points built up. Right now he sits 21 points above John Hunter Nemechek, who has one victory and eight playoff points. Ben Rhodes, one victory and 13 playoff points. And the playoff points come with stage wins there. Back that up to Zane Smith, three victories and six stage wins is what's built his 21 points. John Hunter with the one victory and three stage wins for eight. Ben Rhodes has the one victory and eight stage wins for 13 points. So you can see where those stage wins come into play. Fourth place, mm-hmm. There we have find Chandler Smith. He also has a victory, only one stage win, though, which puts him back at six playoff points. Same for Stuart Friesen in fifth, one victory and one stage. Then we got the top guy without a win, sixth place, Ty Majeski. Does have a stage win, though, so has one playoff point. Christian Ecke, unfortunately, doesn't have any of those categories filled. No wins and no stage wins, so no playoff points built up as of yet. Carson Hocevar is in the eighth spot. Overall, 105 points back, but we're going to look at where he is above the top 10 is the most important right now. He doesn't have the victory. He's come close, but doesn't have the victory. Two stage wins for two playoff points. Then we got Grant Infinger and Matt Crafton sitting at 389 points and 379 points. They are the final two spots that would go into the playoffs, and I believe we got two races remaining. I'll double check that before the Truck Series playoffs. Grant Infinger holds the spot by 39 points. The 11th spot belongs to Derek Krause, is at 350. So that's kind of where the focus is right now, and I'm sure we'll highlight that extremely much on Thursday when we talk a preview show.
Yes, indeed. I just am pulling up the schedule here for the Truck Series. Let's see. May, June, July. Okay, Pocono Raceway, actually, they're at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course on July the 9th. July 23rd, they'll race at Pocono Raceway, and guess what? The last race of their regular season. And then the playoffs begin July 29th at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, July 29th. So, yeah, wow, that's coming up fast.
Well, I knew they had been focusing on, mentioned right now, Derek Krause and Matt Crafton. Crafton not having missed the playoffs, I believe, since the beginning of it, a multi-time champion, and he's the one right on that bubble. Cup level, we got the same situation with Kevin Harvick, so going to be interesting. It's kind of a battle between those two, And as we saw on the cup level, somebody below that cut line picks up a victory, that changes everything.
Well, right now we do have a couple of drivers that are below the cut line, but they're part-time drivers. Corey Heim has two victories, so seven starts out of the 14 races. And then Ryan Preece has six starts out of the 14 races. He also has a victory. But what we're looking at is those drivers who have the 14 starts. If any of them do get a victory, it would bump them up into that top 10 for the playoff contention.
You're right. For those drivers that are on that playoff bubble, such as Matt Crafton, obviously looking to get a victory of his own and build some playoff points. Looking at that, mentioned Zane Smith, yes, has the three wins and would start back as a point leader. But then their shuffling begins because Ben Rhodes would actually move up to second. The drivers that don't have any playoff points start back at the bottom at 10th, and you got three races before they start eliminating drivers. So that gives a 21 points is a big chunk when it comes to adding to your points lead. And Zane Smith, not locked up yet. You mentioned we still have two races to go, only having a 21 and a 30-point lead over John Hunter Nemechek and Ben Rhodes. Winning the regular season championship gives you 15 more playoff points to add to that
bucket.
So right now, Zane Smith looking pretty good, but he can't just take it easy because Nemechek and Ben Rhodes still within striking distance.
For sure, but, you know, these next two races will determine who our regular season champion is here in the Truck Series. So, again, those two races include the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course and Pocono Raceway on July 23rd. So, yeah, this is where the rubber's going to hit the road on who our regular season champion is going to be and who's going to be those 10 drivers to move on to the playoffs, starting at Indianapolis Raceway Park on July 29th.
Well, and looking at that schedule, so some things I highlight there, the uniqueness of the two tracks to wrap up the season between a road course, Mid-Ohio Sports Course, and Pocono Raceway, and then starting the season on a short track like Lucas Oil Raceway Park. We've seen where that's the cutoff race, which makes it interesting. I think starting first round of elimination there on a short track like that can also make it very interesting because somebody could lock themselves in, but somebody could also dig a big hole if they have issues, and that makes the next two races all that more interesting to see who comes out of the hole.
Exactly. Okay, Jay, we've got a few minutes left here. Let's give our Fan for Racing Fantasy update before we get into our Xfinity series.
All right. Whoops. Oh, let me pull that up real quick. I know joked about it. Sharon and I have been trying to make some moves back towards the top. We closed a little bit this past weekend. We're going to have to do it a little bit
more.
I'm
not sure I did.
I was trying to be positive here. So the Truck Series, mentioned they did not run this past weekend, so just give the points there. Andy has a little bit of a gap, 71 points. Sam is at 64. Mike, 63. Tommy, 59. Owen, 57. Brian, 54. Sharon, you're at 51. James at 50. And I'm down at 46. That one's the best one we got as far as from the top down. On the Xfinity Series, Andy is just dominating this one. He's got 91 points. Second place is Brian with 68, which is 23 points behind.
Wow.
And that's two full races right now, and we're not to the bonus points for the playoffs yet. And I take that back. James is also tied there at 68. The good news from there, those two tied at 68, Tommy at 65, I'm at 64, Mike, Owen, and Sam are at 60, and Sharon, you're at 55, but you're only 13 points from second, and I want to add that to what Andy's got for a points lead, and I don't know if you want to hear that number, though.
Okay. And then on the cup side.
Yeah, here we got the newcomer, returning member, Brian. We chipped into his lead. He's got 118 points. Me and Sharon are tied in second at 99, so 19 points behind there. Tommy's at 98, James at 97, Mike at 91, Sam 86, Owen 84, and Andy at 75. So there again, minus that top lead, the rest of us all kind of bunch together. Now, as the Truck Series will be first up, mentioned after two more races, we'll start the playoffs and get double points. Certainly can change in a hurry. Real quick, I'll do the overall. Brian sitting at 240 points. Andy, leading two of the series, is at 237. Tommy, 222. James is at 215. Mike, 214. Sam, 210. Me, 209. Sharon, 205. And Owen, 201. So a little bit of gaps in between there, but certainly with the playoffs looming, starting with the Truck Series, they can be made up, but it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. It's been tough all season. I think this next-gen car has made it really hard to kind of pick the race winners this season, because we don't really know. We didn't really know coming in who was going to adapt to it the quickest. And, you know, some of us figured it out quickly. Some of us are still working on it.
You're right. Just like with anything else, there's so many different factors. We got more players this year. So if you win the week prior and you have to go last, you know, last week Brian said he got stuck with Kyle Busch, wasn't his top choice, and it did not pay off well. But he's got first pick going into Atlanta, and I think he made it with Ryan Blaney. I talked to him earlier today. But that's one factor. And then
that's
we've seen some new tracks. This weekend, specifically Atlanta, being a little bit different. So even looking back at previous results kind of doesn't do as much as it used to. And like you said, mixing in the next-gen car, who's handling it and who's adapting to it, you know, who'd have thought Kevin Harvick wouldn't be a driver to pick?
Exactly, especially at a track like Atlanta. Okay, I know we're just a couple minutes ahead of schedule here. Before we move on, I do want to say a special thanks to Jay. Jay, we appreciate you handling our Fan Racing Fantasy group and keeping everybody on track with their picks. And I know it's been a busy year this year. I was on the road this weekend, and I didn't get my pick in until late, but I think it all worked out. It's been kind of a tough year, but we appreciate you staying on top of things.
Oh, that's not a problem. I know we've been a little lenient with that of the drop of the green flag. But again, we talked about this. We're doing it for fun. So that's the biggest thing, a little bit of fun, a little bit of friendly rivalry amongst the Fan for Racing group here. So no worries about that. And there you mentioned it, having nine people to coordinate through definitely does make it a little bit tougher. And we all got very busy schedules, myself included, as this past week when I was on vacation. I know I got a late start on even notifying people, so that one was on me.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you do coordinate it. You do a very fine job. Okay, we are going to move on now to the reviews of racing this weekend out at Road America, starting with the Xfinity Series. Ty Gibbs is the winner there, just 19, driving the number 54 Monster Energy Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. His crew chief is Chris Gale. It is a 13th annual Henry 180. It was Gibbs' eighth victory in just 34 Xfinity Series races, his fourth victory and 10th top 10 finish this year. And also his first victory and first top 10 finish in two races at Road America. He had to beat, though, Kyle Larson, who finished in second place, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Road America and his first top 10 finish this season. Josh Berry finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in one race at Road America. And Austin Hill, who finished fourth, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. It was an exciting race. I don't know, do you have a TV on, Jay? What's
do
the
I?
Background
is that
for him? Yeah. I keep hearing background noise for some reason.
I'm not sure what you're hearing. I'll adjust my headset as well.
Okay. Okay. Ty Gibbs actually made a last lap pass on Kyle Larson to win at Road America, and it was a masterful pass over pole winner Kyle Larson on the final lap of overtime. Ty Gibbs won Saturday's Henry 180 at Road America on the final lap of that overtime finish. He snuck by Kyle Larson in the number 17 to win the Xfinity Series race. The win, again, is Gibbs' fourth of the season and the third of his career on a road course. In his first series start since 2018, Larson in the number 17 finished second despite leading a race high 31 laps. Josh Berry in the number 8 bettered his best ever finish on a road course with a third place finish. Austin Hill finished fourth, followed by Brandon Jones to round out the top five. The three-race winning streak on the road courses came to an end for A.J. Allmendinger, who finished in sixth place, followed by Riley Herbst, Noah Gregson, Jeremy Clements, Ryan Sieg to fill out the top 10. Kyle Larson actually swept the first two stages. There were 9 lead changes among 6 drivers, 5 cautions for 12 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 74.621 miles per hour. In the post-race interviews, Kyle Larson said that, Kyle Gibbs had raced him very cleanly and made a very clean pass. And he wanted to make sure he returned that favor by racing him cleanly to try to go after the win himself. So I thought that was a huge tribute from the Cup Series champion to Ty Gibbs. And it was very nice to see a clean finish for Ty Gibbs in this race today.
It was, and that was one I know there was a little bit of a bump I don't even know for sure if there was a bump there. Kyle did go wide on the one corner, but you're right. Overall, it was very clean racing. Same with on the Cup level. And I know that you're one that really likes to see that. Road courses, yeah, tended to lean themselves towards maybe that not being the case, but we really did have a great finish there on this one. I was waiting to see because as top two like that, even if they're pressing each other, making a mistake, to see if Josh Berry or Austin Hill would be the one to capitalize on that in the event it were to happen. That's kind of, I was listening to it on the radio on the way to the racetrack. That's what I kept in my mind was if these two get together, even like you said, just pressuring each other into making a mistake. As we saw Kyle Larson go a little bit wide, or I heard it, you saw it, but for the third, fourth place drivers to be able to capitalize, that's what makes road course interesting. And yet again, Road America, I have been there. I came home from my vacation there in Minnesota a little early. I didn't get to go out there this year. If you get the chance to spend the 4th of July weekend at Road America, it would just be outstanding. Very beautiful country, and they put on some great racing.
Absolutely. Now, the margin of victory here was 0.858 seconds, so it was a close finish. But there were some drivers that did run into issues. Sammy Smith on lap 45 had an engine issue, taking him out of the race. Also, on lap 37, Sheldon Creed had an engine issue that ended his day. Brake issue for Joe Graff Jr. On lap 17 took him out early. Header issue for Ted Gillen took him out on lap 13. And a suspension issue for Will Rogers took him out on lap 9. Several drivers were caught up in accidents, and I know we're going to talk about this on Hot Topics. But some of the people caught up in accidents include Cole Custer on lap 43. On lap 39, it was Miguel Paludo. On lap 33, it was Chris Dyson. Lap 25, Tyler Reddick. Lap 24, there were several drivers, including Sage Karam, Landon Castle, Myatt Snyder, Brandon Brown, and Brett Moffitt all caught up in an incident there. And again, that will be a hot topic on our show coming up at 10 o'clock. So, yeah, that was unfortunate because that was fairly early in the race, or at least at the halfway mark, I guess, of that race for that to happen. And really sad that some of those drivers could not continue on.
Well, without going too deep into the hot topic discussion, it did involve two drivers. One of them, it appeared, made a hard turn, Noah Gregson, but it ended up not involving just the two of them. As you mentioned, there was a list there that were innocent bystanders or by racers, if you will, that got involved in it. And a couple of them, some hard hits. I know Myatt Snyder was one that Brandon Brown, I think, was actually checking on after he got out of his own car.
Mhm. Yeah. I know Brandon Brown said it was a really hard hit for him. It took him a minute to kind of gather himself up. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that happened. Again, we'll talk about it in Hot Topics, but just to kind of update everybody on where your favorite driver might not have had the finish they were looking for, and what kind of issues people had during this race as well. Let's go ahead and move on to the points report here, Jay.
Before I do that, the one you mentioned there that unfortunately did finish down towards the bottom, and I even come back and watch the race on replay, Sammy Smith, trying to see where you said he finished there. Not indicative of where he ran. He had been running top 10 throughout the race in that series debut here with the Xfinity Series. There, 24th, and it says an engine problem. Okay. He had been running in the top 10. It looks like he qualified 8th. Certainly put on a good showing in his first start with the number 18 Joe Gibbs Racing machine. So I wanted to give a shout-out to him there.
Yeah. He came so close to the finish of that race. He went out in lap 45 of 48 laps. So really a shame that he couldn't finish that race, but it was an engine issue.
All right. For the point standings, you mentioned A.J. Allmendinger trying to go for a fourth consecutive road course victory. Didn't get it, but does have two wins to fall back on with 12 playoff points. Leads over Ty Gibbs now, who has 4 victories, the most in the series, along with 3 stage wins, gives him 23 playoff points. So that's going to come factor when we reset for the playoffs. Third place, there we have Justin Allgaier, and I believe, Sharon, you already picked him up for Atlanta this weekend. 2 victories and 5 stage wins gives him 15 playoff points. Mentioned Noah Gregson, 2 victories. We see that a lot. 6 stage wins for a total of 16 playoff points. Josh Berry, 2 victories as well, and 4 stage wins for 14 points. Brandon Jones in 6th. 1 victory and 1 stage win gives him 6 playoff points. Sam Mayer, the first of the ones that don't have a victory. 2 stage wins, though, gives him 2 playoff points. Austin Hill got the season opener victory, gives him 5 playoff points. And then surprisingly, we got Riley Herbst in 9th, zeros across the board. Daniel Hemric, last year's champion, moving over to Colleg Racing, though, this year. 2 stage wins, but no victories, has 2 playoff points. Sitting down there in 10th spot, 417 points. Secure unless we run into that, somebody getting a victory from below the cut line. 11th is Ryan Sieg, right now is on the good side. He's at 400 points. And Landon Castle at 390 are your final 2 that would be in based off of points. But behind him, Anthony Alfredo, pretty much getting close to a must-win situation. Landon Castle is at 390. Alfredo is at 318, so that's 72 points that he'd have to make up. not likely here in these final events. Brett Moffitt, same boat, is at 303. Brandon Brown, 302. Jeb Burton, Sheldon Creed, and Myatt Schneider. Jeremy Clements as far down as 20th, and Bailey Curry in 22nd. Who am I missing here? Joe Graff Jr., another one, all starts, 16 starts. Those are the ones that would be eligible if they get the victory. Actually, Xfinity, let me correct that. Xfinity Series, you have to be in the top 20 in points. So right now, Bailey Curry and Joe Graff not only would have to get the victory, but get in the top 20. Curry is 22nd, Graff is 25th. So they'd have two battles they got to win there, get into the top 20 in points first off and then get the victory.
Okay, now just a quick update here, too, on the Xfinity Series. They have 10 more races starting at Atlanta before their playoffs begin. And the playoffs will begin with Texas Motor Speedway on September the 24th. So Texas Motor Speedway will be the cutoff race where the season champion, regular season champion will be crowned. That's on September the 16th at Bristol Motor Speedway. The next 10 races include Atlanta, New Hampshire, Pocono, and Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course. In August, it would be Michigan, Watkins Glen, and Daytona International Speedway through August. And in September, it ends with Darlington, Kansas, and Bristol Motor Speedway. And then the playoffs begin September 24th at Texas Motor Speedway. So this is the start of their 10-race countdown, Jay.
Yeah, I got a little bit more time for these Xfinity Series drivers, but I mentioned that points gap, and we've seen week in and week out. These drivers are consistent, maybe have a bad finish, but it's going to take a lot to try and close up, even in 10 races, a 90-point gap for Anthony Alfredo, or 72, I think is what it is. That's gaining 7 points per race over some drivers that are finishing at top 10 every week, top 10, top 15. So that's tough to make up.
It is. It is indeed. I'm going to go ahead. Anything else that you wanted to make sure we mention before we move on?
Are there any news? Yeah, let me back out here and see if we got any news updates. One, I did notice I didn't put up on our hot topics. It was a late decision or announcement anyway on the entry list for Atlanta for the Joe Gibbs Racing team. It's Ryan Truex, I believe, is going to be in the car as he picked up another race. I know last week they were saying that seat was still open or to be announced, and it was announced either yesterday or today that Ryan Truex will be in the car at Atlanta.
Okay. Another thing that fans should be aware of is Junior Motorsports is on pace to set a new team record for wins in 2022. So not only has the team won 40% of the races this year, but it earned its sixth victory of the season in fifth and seven races. The win also came one event earlier than the previous record start during the 2014 season. So watch for Junior Motorsports. They're on pace to set that new team record for wins this season.
Well, and that certainly could lead into the hot topic discussion. I know we've had some follow-up on that of Junior Motorsports moving to the Cup level. I think Denny Hamlin mm-hmm. had some comments to Junior about that. So if we have time tonight, we might have a little discussion on that. But that tells you they're ready. I mean, when they're knocking records like that down in the Xfinity Series, you got to look at them maybe moving up.
Absolutely. Okay, we are going to move on now to the Cup Series at Road America, the second annual Quick Trip 250 presented by Jockey Made in America, won by Tyler Reddick, age 26, and the number 8, 3 Chai Chevrolet. For Richard Childress Racing with crew chief Randall Burnett. It was his first victory in 92 Cup Series races, and his first victory and seventh top 10 finish of this season. Also his first victory and second top 10 finish in two races at Road America. Chase Elliott finished second, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Road America and his 12th top 10 finish of the season. Kyle Larson finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in two races at Road America. And Austin Cindric in seventh was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, Tyler Reddick had to out-duel Chase Elliott at Road America for his first NASCAR Cup Series victory, and it was a dogfight between the two drivers, pure and simple. It was Tyler Reddick who out-dueled pole winner Chase Elliott in the intense mano-a-mano battle in Sunday's Quick Trip 250 at Road America. The pole winner, Elliott, finished second, followed by Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez, Chris Buescher, Austin Cindric, Michael McDowell having an amazing season, A.J. Allmendinger, and Kevin Harvick to round out the top 10. Reddick ran up front for most of the day. He took the lead with 15 to go and pulled away from Elliott to win by more than 3 seconds. Stage one was won by Chase Briscoe. Stage two by Ryan Blaney. There were 8 lead changes among 6 drivers, 2 cautions, and 2 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 96.622 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 here in the Cup Series?
Well, I got to limit it to the top 2 to start with. We talked about this in the Xfinity Series. Great, clean racing there at the end. Both of them charging back and forth, battled it out up there at the top for majority of the race. Chase Elliott having led 36 laps, Tyler Reddick for 16. But for Tyler Reddick to, on a road course, get that first victory over a driver like Chase Elliott, it just has to be an added bonus of that. And it was a very clean race, so glad to see that. Huge win for Tyler Reddick and Richard Childress Racing. They were on that edge of, I don't know if they had to win to get in, but they wanted to make sure. So to close it out and get the victory, I know it still doesn't 100% guarantee it, and I know we got that as one of our hot topics, but it's pretty darn close as we're getting down to it. I believe we need 3 new winners from below the cut line in the last 6 races, so the odds of it getting less and less. But Tyler Reddick doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
Exactly right. He becomes, I think, the 5th first-time winner this season as well. So I think that's pretty cool to see happening this season as well. And I think I do feel like it's the new next-gen car is the reason that we're seeing that. We felt like it was going to be the newer drivers that were going to adapt to it more quickly, and that is proving itself out. A few drivers had issues in this race. I don't see any accident situations where drivers were taken out early. On lap 9, Loris Hesemans had a fuel pump issue that took him out of the race. Also, a brake issue for Bubba Wallace. He went out on lap 54 of 62 for a brake issue. And another brake issue happened for Austin Dillon, who was out on lap 60 of 62 laps early. Everybody else finished the race one running, so that was really good. We mentioned the margin of victory, more than 3 seconds, 3.304 seconds is the margin of victory for Tyler Reddick over Chase Elliott. And again, I do feel like that was huge.
Well, as you hit on those, we see the regular contenders then, especially when it comes to road courses as of recently, though, right behind them. You did have Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain. Chastain having picked up his first victory at COTA. Daniel Suarez, another one in the same spot as Reddick, got his a couple of weeks ago at Sonoma. And then another good run. And when we get to the points, we'll talk about Chris Buescher as he was in that number 17 Fastenal Ford for RFK. needs to that at least a good start with closing out this season. Not sure that'll get him into the playoffs, though. And you already mentioned Michael McDowell, yet again having a very solid season with Front Row Motorsports, finishing in the eighth position. And Kevin Harvick, we're going to hit on him, finished 10th. He is now out of the playoffs based on Tyler Reddick's win and the shuffling of points. So he's going to have to start looking pretty hard at getting a victory as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting scenario that is shaping up here in the Cup Series. And again, they already started their countdown for the last 10 races of the season. So let's see, let me pull this up just to give everybody an update here. I believe that 10 race countdown, let me see how many races they have left. So we have Atlanta Motor Speedway coming up this week, New Hampshire, Pocono, and Indianapolis. That's four more races here in July. Then in August, Michigan, Richmond, Watkins Glen, and Daytona International Speedway. That's another four races. So only eight races left. The 10-race countdown started with Nashville, and they're down to just eight races left in the regular season. It will end at Daytona International Speedway on August 27th, and then the playoffs begin on September 4th at Killington Raceway.
And there again, several factors come into play as we go through those eight races. We have had a first-time winner on three of the road courses so far this year. I mentioned Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez, and now Tyler Reddick. And trying to just make up points, you have a champion like Kevin Harvick, who was 2 years back, had 10 race wins in the season, not having one yet this year, right on the bubble. I mean, that tells you how competitive this is right now with the next-gen car. And some of these teams, Trackhouse Racing coming in, firing on all cylinders, if not an extra one.
Well, the thing that I think is so interesting in the Cup Series is we have a couple of drivers, if not more, I guess it's just a couple now, that are below the cut line that have victories. So there's only three spots that are left for drivers to pick up on points. And like you say, Kevin Harvick is kind of out of that equation right now. And he is sitting 11th in the series point standings. But he's knocked out because of the drivers below the cut line that have victories.
Yeah, we've seen that get pushed up year in and year out. I know we've had this discussion, of, I'd say, the last 3 years of whether or not 16 different winners could happen, or we have that possibility of somebody getting a win and not getting in. I know we use the phrase win and you're in, but it is possible you could have a victory and not get in. And we're real close to it this year. You mentioned eight races left. We'd have to have three new winners that come from below the cut line that don't have a victory in order for that to happen. But I know last year, Michael McDowell won the Daytona 500. And as it got down towards the end of the season, it was possible that he could get bumped out even holding that victory.
Exactly. Let's go ahead and cover the series point standings because, again, it's just an interesting scenario that is developing here.
All right. Well, at the top with two race wins and three stage wins for a total of 13 playoffs, we have NASCAR's most popular driver, Chase Elliott, got a pretty good sizable lead over Ryan Blaney. This has grown a little bit over the past few weeks. Ryan Blaney did have the points lead at one point. Blaney has won without a victory. So, again, come reset time, he's going to get slid down to possibly 13th, 14th in points. But right now he's in second. Ross Chastain is in third. He's got two victories with three stage wins for 13 playoff points. Kyle Larson, fourth, one victory, two stage wins, and seven playoff points. Joey Logano a little bit higher. He's got 12 points built up off of two wins and two stage victories. Kyle Busch has one of each for six playoff points. Then you got Martin Truex and Christopher Bell, two of the JGR cars. They're going to come into play with that of Hot Topics. I know Mike put that up. Seventh and eighth in points. Truex has five stage wins, however, for five playoff points. Bell has none. Alex Bowman, one win, one stage win, six playoff points. William Byron, right now in 10th, but two victories and three stage wins, 13 playoff points. He's going to climb right back up to about fourth or fifth when we reset, as it were right now. We talked about Kevin Harvick, 11th overall in points, but no victories, no stage wins. He's actually right now technically out of the playoffs. Eric Almirola, his teammate, same position. Zeros across the board there, and it'll be a battle between them. Right now, 27 points between the two of them. Tyler Reddick, with his victory and two stage wins, has seven playoff points, is in the 13th position. Your Daytona winner, Austin Cindric, one win, one stage victory, 6 points. Kurt Busch is now inside the top 16, has a victory and two stage wins for seven, as well as Chase Briscoe. And Daniel Suarez actually has the same. Those three, all three the same. One victory, two stage wins for seven playoff points. Then 18th, you got Eric Jones at 414 points. He is 65 points behind Harvick, and that would be to battle in on points. Just not sure we're going to see that happen, but.
Well, he could get a win, though.
Right, most certainly. Again, that would at least elevate him up there into the conversation, as long as we don't have more than the 16 winners. Looking down, you mentioned Denny Hamlin, 20th in points, has two victories, two stage wins for 12 playoff points. He's going to be the one to jump up the most, to go from 20th, possibly all the way up to top five based on what he's got for playoff points right now. And he would be the bottom one. Now, all the way through, Brad Keselowski, I know he's one we talked about early in the season. He is inside the top 30. You have to be in the top 30 to be eligible with a victory. Corey LaJoie and Cody Ware right now have made all the races, so a victory would put them in, but they would have to advance into the top 30 as well. So right now it's Brad Keselowski. A victory would move him up. Corey LaJoie and Cody Ware, though, also have to be aware of points in the top 20 or top 30, sorry, at the cup level as far as points.
Yes, indeed. So right now you do have two drivers that are below the cut line with wins, including Denny Hamlin and Daniel Suarez. They displace those two drivers that don't have wins, Eric Almirola and Kevin Harvick. So that's why this is happening for Kevin Harvick and Eric Almirola. It's becoming more and more urgent for them within the next eight races to get that victory to secure their spot in the playoffs. We'll have to wait and see what happens. I think Atlanta might be an opportunity for Harvick, but I think he's going to have to beat some of these other drivers. Like Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney for that victory at Atlanta.
Most certainly. It's going to be a barn burner over here in Hotlanta, as I put up on our chart. The one thing I look at, how interesting this is, if we were to get another first-time winner on the year from below the cut line, Eric Jones, Austin Dillon should be good at Atlanta. That would move Christopher Bell in eighth spot in points out of the playoffs, as he doesn't have a victory. And then Truex would be next. You're talking seventh and eighth out of 16, and they could get bumped out if we get that another first-time winner for the year.
Yeah. So you know they're both of those drivers are going to be racing hard at Atlanta Motor Speedway, if not for the victory, at least to secure their spot points-wise. But it's not a guarantee if somebody below that cut line wins. So interesting scenario. We are at the top of the hour, though, Jay, and it is now time for us to move over to our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And joining us for tonight's conversation is our Fame for Racing crew member, Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy. We're doing good. I barely heard you there, Tommy. I'm not sure why.
How are y'all tonight? Thanks for having me back.
Oh,
glad to be on.
There you are. Okay. It's always great to have you on the show, and we always enjoy hearing your point of view. Let's have you go ahead and start us off with the first top topic here.
With Noah Gragson's wreck this weekend, or intentional wreck at Road America.
Okay. Jay, your thoughts about that?
Well, they've kind of changed over the past 2 days. First off, I want to give a shout out here. We got a new listener, a friend of mine from a little further south, Jared Hudson, coming on board and listening tonight. He's another dirt track guy that covers dirt track racing, so appreciate Jared listening. Talking about Noah Gragson, though, that was a tough one. And I know Mike's got his opinion, and we've heard it a little bit already.
On our channel, but I don't think our listeners have heard his opinion yet.
Right. Well, yeah, okay. He's expressed his opinion on Noah Gragson over 2 or 3 years, so I was kind of going off
true.
Of that.
You're right about that.
it did, even on the radio, from what announcers were saying, appear to be an intentional hit. I watched the race when I got home. The first replay I saw, it looked like he kind of came off the curb. Second one, as they slowed it down and replayed it, not so much. That he definitely appeared to turn into him out of anger and frustration. The way he hit him on the straightaway, it didn't look like he meant to turn him or hook him, just bang him and let him know. What I didn't like was that put it right in the driver's side door. As it turned out, it did hook him and caused a melee. As Sharon, I don't remember how many you said, 7 or 8 cars that were involved in it, and some of them in some hard hits. So
yes.
The question becomes, does NASCAR penalize him? And I didn't have my chart pulled up. I know Mike posted something that there was at least discussion of anything was on the table as far as possible penalties. Let me see if I can pull that up here. Nope, I went under fantasy. Sorry. Anyway, I can't say I would blame NASCAR if they were to penalize him, because apparently there too, he did admit it post-race that what he had done. That I hadn't heard yet, but apparently he did admit it, which leads me to believe NASCAR may have to step in and do something. I'm not saying it's right, but we've seen it in the past. Kyle Busch comes to mind. He knows he did it, but he won't admit it because then you can't prove intent, you know, which would make it a lot harder for NASCAR to do something. The only thing I worry about is, and Sharon, I know this will lead into a separate hot topic for you, we have seen some bump and runs or some aggressive driving, whether it be for a victory or a stage win or anything. Where do you draw the line of, I don't want to see it become, I believe it's Formula One and some of the open wheels that have the race steward that make calls that determine a race. Sometimes I feel it's just racing. You got to let them race. This may have crossed over that line, though. So like I said, if NASCAR decides to penalize them, there is enough there that I feel they are justified in it. I just don't want to see them put in a box where they are now making judgment calls as every set of cars or every set of drivers are racing hard throughout a race. If they happen to wreck, that they have to then make a call as well. Was it intentional?
Okay. Yeah. He admitted, I think, in his post-race interview that it was an intentional thing. He said something to the effect of he'd had enough. There were several incidents beforehand that had taken place between the two drivers, and I guess Noah took it upon himself to say enough is enough. I'm trying to find the folder here that I can. Yeah, I'm trying to find a folder here I don't know. Deleted. I'm trying to find the folder that gives his post-race interview, and I'm having a hard time coming up with that. So maybe he says it in here. Anyway, he did say that he felt like he had had enough with the driver in question, and so he took it upon himself to send a message. The problem with that, and Mike brings it up here in his comments, Noah's beef with one driver destroyed a lot of uninvolved cars this weekend, including quite a few who can't really afford to destroy cars like that. And if I go back and look at the cars that were involved, and I don't know if Tyler Reddick was out on lap 25 because of an accident, but the drivers that were all involved in this particular accident were Sage Karam, or however you pronounce that, Landon Castle, Myatt Snyder, Brandon Brown said his bell was rung. Brett Moffitt, drivers that were involved in that incident. So some of these drivers were just minding their own business and got caught up in an incident between just the two drivers. So Mike feels that Noah deserves at least and the unofficial talking to by Dale Jr. I don't know that Noah has ever been with a team that is at risk of missing the next race because they wrecked in the previous race. Noah needs to understand that his actions can have consequences for people that can be catastrophic. Yes, it was blatant, and even in the post-race interview, Noah admitted it was intentional, and he believed that Karam deserved it. The problem is that Noah touched off a massive wreck that collected close to a dozen cars. I don't think it was quite that many, about a half a dozen cars, none of which had anything to do with the beef between Noah Gregson and Sage Karam. A lot of those cars were benchmarker types who are just squeaking by on a shoestring budget. I'm all in for boys have at it and settle your beefs among yourselves, but at the same time, that shouldn't collect a large number of people just minding their own business and trying to run laps. And he goes on to say maybe a monetary fine or points penalty from NASCAR wouldn't be appropriate, but maybe Junior should take Gregson out to Brandon Brown or Tommy Joe Martin's for a few weeks so Noah can hang bodies and prep cars and get an appreciation for just how hard those little teams work. Maybe then he'll be less apt to cause chaos that reaches far beyond his car and the car that he has a beef with. My other issue with this is that Noah Gregson ended up finishing up in the top 10, if I remember correctly. Let's see, Brandon Jones.
Yeah, I believe he was ninth.
Ninth. Yeah, so, no, that was Jeremy Clements. Am I looking at, yeah. No, Gregson finished eighth. So he ended up finishing eighth and still coming home with a decent finish. Sage Karam, on the other hand, was out on lap 24 and ended up finishing in 31st place, followed by Landon Castle, Myatt Snyder, Brandon Brown, and Brett Moffitt, all drivers that were involved in that incident. So the guy that kind of hit that off ended up with a top 10 finish while everybody else ended up placing 30th or worse. So I do think that there needs to be something done with regard to that. Noah Gregson's had this issue in the past. We thought he was making some headway. But it seems like he took a step back this weekend with blatantly doing that. I wish I could find his comments because I did read it earlier. And let me see if I can find it at NASCAR. His comments afterwards were pretty clear that he did that intentionally. So we'll go back to Tommy and let him comment on that, and I'll see if I can find that quote by the time it comes back around to me. Tommy, your thoughts?
Well, like y'all were saying, I kind of thought that we were past this. I thought we had seen some maturity this year, but this is definitely a step back. It was definitely intentional, and then he even admitted it. And the worst part, though, is how violent that crash was. There was about two hard impacts from, like, Brandon Brown and Myatt Snyder and maybe even one other car. I mean, it was vicious hits for those guys. And, I mean, somebody could have been injured, and I just think that that's ridiculous for just hard racing, I guess, between them. I don't know. Maybe he was just having a bad day or something. Maybe he regrets it, but yeah, it was definitely intentional, and you could tell. And I think that NASCAR should look into possibly doing something. I mean, he even admitted it afterwards, and it just did not look good. I mean, it was a pretty bad crash. I think that maybe I don't know about a suspension. If they do one, yeah, you know, maybe one or two races. That's what Matt Kenseth got for doing what he did to Joey. Or do you just fine him? Or do you dock points? There's so many options there to do. Or does Dale Jr. just pull him to the side and talk to him and tell him, you know, two strikes, one more, and, you know, we'll see. So, I don't know, but it was definitely an intentional one, you can tell. And then he even admits it later. So, it's just not looking good. It's just not a good move. Like you guys have said, we thought we had seen some maturity. And the thing is, you know, him and Ty Gibbs and, like, John Hunter Nemechek and those guys, those were the upcoming stars, in my opinion. And, you know, he's one of them with, like, four or five Xfinity wins. And, you know, he's got the character, too. So maybe he'll rebound from this and then no more mistakes moving forward from him, at least for a while.
Okay. Jay.
Like I said, I'm kind of in the middle here of, and Tommy mentioned the Matt Kenseth suspension, and I don't even know that Matt Kenseth fully admitted that one, but it was clear. That had been a case, though, of over several weeks. Being this was one race within, and it was within the race, very unfortunate for a lot of teams that had nothing to do with it. And I don't want to say a name with it, but I know one of the broadcasters had said they didn't have a problem with it. Their only issue was that they wish he'd waited going into the next corner where he could bump Sage Karam off the track and it not affect somebody else. I'm not fully agreeing with that, but I've always said what Matt Kenseth did at Martinsville with Joey Logano, he went out there and did indeed only take out Joey Logano. So that takes some skill. With that of watching that, like I said, when he did it, it didn't appear, though, that he went to actually hook him. It was just to slam him in the door to let him know he was mad. I didn't like the fact that puts it in the driver's side door, but yeah. Like I said, it didn't appear that he was really trying to hook him and totally take him out, but bump him and let him know he was mad at him. It just, unfortunately, the way it unfolded. So that side of it, I see where NASCAR may not penalize him. But on the other hand, I can see where they have. We haven't seen, when we talk about Noah Gerrigsen's history, though, we haven't seen as much on track. We've seen multiple off track where he's been involved in scuffles, but not on track. And I know that becomes a big thing when you talk about using the car as a weapon. And that's where I said, I don't want to see NASCAR have to be involved in that kind of judgment anytime two cars touch. Was it intentional? Was it that they might have to penalize? And that's why I'm afraid that they might open Pandora's box by doing so. But there is enough evidence there. If they were to make that, I wouldn't argue against it either, if they were to do a suspension or penalty of some sort.
Yes, indeed. Now, it does say that there were 13 cars that were involved in this melee. Brandon Brown was one of the victims of the accidents. He claimed from his mangled car and set against the retaining wall in turn four, clearly in pain from the hits he had taken from the accident. When he exited the infield care center after evaluation, he was in much better spirits. Karam was not very forgiving. He says that that was ridiculous. I've never been turned into a straight line like that. You can't get that heated when you're driving a race car. Unfortunately, he let his emotions get the best of him today. And I think that's true. I think that Noah Gregson did let his emotions get the better of him. And he made a decision that affected a lot of people. Gregson said, this was his post-race comment. I guess he forgot the three times before that he'd throw it into the corner, Doris, and run us off the racetrack. After a while, you get sick and tired of it. I hate it for his guys, but I'm fighting to race for a championship here, and I'm really over getting run over. He started it. I finished it. We're good. I think it just shows a little bit of immaturity that he took out so many other drivers. He says he hates that that happened, and yet he's the one who made the decision that made that accident happen. So at some point, Noah Gregson has to learn how to manage those emotions better. And I know he might get frustrated. I get where he's coming from. Sage Karam is not running for a championship. He's coming in, and the way he races affects, what's happening with the driver who is racing for a championship. But Noah Gregson, you got to ask yourself, why was he racing with these drivers? Why was he back in the field? Was there a reason why he was back there that put himself at risk? So ultimately, whatever happened to put him back in the pack is partly responsible for this as well. So I do think that points penalty, thing that really gets the message across that you cannot use your car from an emotional point of view to send a message to another driver on the track. And I know that drivers have done it. You mentioned Kenseth. Kenseth took out one driver, the driver he had a beef with. Noah Gregson did not do that. He took out several drivers. Some drivers were able to recover and still race, but five drivers did not. He took out 13 drivers in that accident. So I do think that a message needs to be sent to Noah Gregson that that is not acceptable. It's not racing. It's not showing your skill as a driver. It's letting your emotions get the better of you. And Noah Gregson still has that learning curve to get through. And I know some drivers never get through that learning curve. And I know part of the passion of being a NASCAR driver is, that drive to win. But at some point, you have to manage that to be a professional race car driver. And I don't think Noah Gregson is there yet. Tommy, you get the last word here.
Yeah, I definitely think that he's going to have something happen to him for that because, like we've been saying, he took out a lot of cars. Brandon Brown, was slow initially after the accident. And it just did not look good. And I'm sure Junior will have a talk with him in addition to all this. And, I just can't believe that he took a step back because, last year he kind of had some fights in his moments. And now he had been doing good and had like he had matured and like he was going to be cup ready. And then he did this. So we'll see what happens, if he gets suspended or if he gets a fine or if he just gets a slap on the wrist or something. But either way, not only did he wreck the field or 13 cars, but then he admitted to it later on pit road. So He can't hide from it now, which he couldn't hide from it anyway, because you could tell he clearly hooked them on the track too. So anyway, maybe he'll learn from this, and maybe he'll mature out from it.
We'll let that be the last word. Now, Elton Sawyer on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio says that all options are on the table for potential penalties or not. Noah Gregson, after intentionally wrecking Sage Karam on Road America, fines, points, suspension, or nothing are part of the options there. So we'll see what happens. Jay, you get to bring up the next hot topic.
Well, I just wanted to add this real quick. You know, his actions does affect a lot of people. You don't ever know, because that was my pick for Atlanta this weekend, but I don't know if he's going to be suspended, so I couldn't pick him. So just wanted to throw that out there, too. It affects even me. Next hot topic,
okay.
We got Mike putting in a release, it looks like, from NASCAR and NBC. The teams of Christopher Bell and Bubba Wallace are going to swap pit crew members heading into Sunday's Cup race at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Some real interesting things there between the JGR and Team 2311.
Okay. Tommy, your thoughts about this?
Yeah, so, you know, kind of we had talked about this last week a little bit about how Bubba's pit crew was struggling a little bit. So I'm really surprised here to see this, that they're going to make the switch from Christopher Bell over to Bubba. So we'll see how Christopher Bell handles Bubba's team. But I said last week that it's kind of ridiculous that Bubba got that much flack for what he said. I mean, Kevin Harvick and other drivers do it all the time. So I didn't see what the big deal was. I guess just Bubba that fly, but yeah, maybe now Bubba can get it turned around. I mean, he's been running good until he's had those pit stops. So maybe now he'll have the results to back his good performances. So, as for Christopher Bell, though, I guess he loses some good crew members, and we'll see how he Bubba's pit crew.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting scenario because Christopher Bell is much higher in the series point standings than Bubba Wallace. Let me look at that just to kind of back up what I'm saying here. In the Cup Series point standings, Christopher Bell.
I believe.
Go ahead. He's eighth.
I was going to say, Sharon, eighth. And if a new winner comes from below the cut line, he would be the next one. Remember when we were talking about their point standings?
Mm-hmm.
He's the next one on the line if we get a new winner from below the cut line.
Exactly. Exactly. And Bubba Wallace is ranked 25th. I think it's kind of interesting that they're taking the pit crew from a driver who is eighth in the series point standings and putting it on the team that is 25th. In the series point standings to see if they can help him. It'll be interesting to see, and maybe it will kind of put a spotlight on if it is the pit crew or if it is communications or what the problem might be. But I understand Bubba Wallace's frustration, but again, and I know other people have done this. It's how they do it, and that I think he was a little bit harsh, to be honest with you. I've heard Kevin Harvick do it. I've heard Kurt Busch do it. I've heard Kyle Busch do it, and I know they've been harsh too. But it's what do they do after that, and how do they handle it after that? That's what we don't see, and I've got a feeling that he may have burned some bridges at this other this last incident. And when you burn that bridge, this pit crew isn't going to do anything to help you. So I think it was smart for them to make the switch from that perspective to give Bubba Wallace a chance to work with a different crew that might be more willing toward him in moving forward. But I do feel like Christopher Bell is getting the short end of the stick here. And maybe we'll find out that these guys aren't as bad as Bubba Wallace thinks they are if they can help Christopher Bell, you know, improve his situation. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. There's just so many layers here that make this an interesting scenario. Again, taking the pick group from 25th place, Bubba Wallace, and putting it on the number 18 of Christopher Bell and moving that team down to the 25th place team, on the surface, it doesn't look like a smart move. But we don't know, again, what's going on behind the scenes. And I suspect there are some things behind the scenes that are going here that are causing that to happen. So let's go back to Jay. What are your thoughts, Jay?
All right. I know it's still 3 minutes out. Did you want to do your announcement this early or jump in whenever you need to?
Yeah, let me go ahead and do it. Thank you, Jay.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and do it here. Excuse me. At this time of the night, we do a special announcement for our first time listeners. And just to remind everybody that we go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But we are going to continue our conversation here, so you'll hear us go off the air mid-sentence. We continue to record that conversation as part of our bonus overtime material so that fans can listen to that on our podcast. Now, I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook now to let you know that the podcast is now available. And at that point, you can go to our player at fanfaration.com and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. Again, we do record that so that it is available for our listeners on the podcast. So watch for those that tweet and that information on Facebook, and we'll go ahead and proceed with Jay's comments here.
You hit on a key word there, Sharon. There's levels to this. Whether or not Bubba Wallace was justified, you mentioned several drivers. We've seen it before, taking it out on the crew. But it's been documented, the problems that he's had a fast car, and it has been pit issues that have cost him finishes. The broadcasters all talked about that. I think the key factor in a change being made was Kurt Busch calling out JGR of the supply issue of who they're providing to the team. Now, Mike put up, you know, it's interesting that they didn't take maybe from Denny Hamlin or Kyle Busch's team, who already have wins and are very securely in the playoffs, whereas Christopher Bell kind of is possibly on the bubble. As Sharon pointed out, if a new winner comes from 16, below 16th, that doesn't have a victory yet, it would bump it all the way up to Christopher Bell in eighth as far as being the driver pushed out. So that toying with Christopher Bell's team is kind of the most risky, if you ask me. But I do think a change needed to be made. And then the other thing you said, Sharon, there is, you know, what has all happened behind the scenes, the discussions that were had, how this came about. We'll never know unless somebody goes public with it, which I don't think they would. As you mentioned, that might have been a better way to handle the situation to begin with for Bubba Wallace, but we've seen it all year long. So I do think he was justified in it. Even his crew chief, Booty Barker, you know, said, hey, you have every right to be upset to try and bring him back down. And I think that they have since. I know I saw Bubba Wallace's interview of they did talk as a team to get back on the same page, and I think they can and will. They're too good a team to not. Both Bubba Wallace as a driver, as well as that team, we've seen what 2311 has done in the 2 years of existence, having expanded with Kurt Busch. So I think overall it should be a good thing. But I'm with Mike. I don't know if I'd have toyed with the number 20, being that they're at the risk they're at, even being an eighth in points.
Yeah, I'm just really kind of shocked that they're doing that. Tell me, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about the whole part of him upsetting his pit crew so bad today, left in part. But, I mean, like I said, I mean, Kevin Hart, other drivers, a bit more blunt. But, I mean, got to be frustrated. I mean, and it's been how many every weeks in a row that he's had an error. So, I mean, it was eventually going to build over and happen. Just, you know, Chris Revell's the one who gets the short end of the stick here, and maybe Bubba will get, I guess, maybe he'll find some more consistency on pit road now, and maybe he'll get to turn maybe he will have a pit stop error, and he can, you know, round out good finishes instead of running good and having a terrible finish.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I guess it's just one of those things. We'll have to see how it plays out. Your suggestion, Stan, I thought was a good suggestion. Why didn't they take it from a team that already has the win and they're in the playoffs already instead of putting Christopher Bell, who is actually on the bubble right now, and making him more vulnerable? That part of it does not make sense to me. But we'll see what happens. You know, maybe it'll be a genius move in the long run. We'll have to see how it plays out. But I know a lot of people will be watching that at this next race. Jay, your final thoughts?
Well, and not being on the inside and being part of the decision-making, but we know that Joe Gibbs has to have some other crews, whether it be for Xfinity teams that are doing stuff for the Xfinity series, or when they have crew suspensions or missing people that they fill in, that maybe some personnel change without swapping the entire crew from a team, no matter what position they're in. I'm sure Kyle Busch, he's got two wins. Danny Hamlin's got two wins, saying, hey, my crew got me here. Don't take them away. So, I, if you would have done that, I'm sure Hamlin or Kyle Busch would have had some things to say as well as far as them taking their crew. The other thing I would like to say, I guess, would be kudos to the crew. I didn't hear any of the crew this past weekend after Road America come out and call out Bubba Wallace. You mentioned he wasn't involved in a wreck but finished way down the list. He spent some time off-road, so kudos to the crew for not coming on and saying, hey, we got you out of the pits fast enough. You just didn't do it on the track this week.
Exactly. They could have very well have done that. Okay, Tommy, what's our next hot topic?
All right, let's go with let's go with the Beyond the Flag article on how Suarez didn't clinch a playoff spot. But, of course, we know that that's not factual unless if there's 16 or 17 winners, then there might be a possibility of somebody not making it.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts?
Well, we talked about this. We all use the montage of you win and you're in. It is possible. Technically, the way it is written, it is true. He has not technically clinched. The only way you clinch this early in the season is to have two victories, because there can't be 13 drivers, more than 16 drivers that have two wins. So their headline is technically correct. And this year it is possible, as we talked about, we could have, what did we decide, Sharon, eight more races if we were to get three more winners from below the cut line, that it's possible for that. Denny Hamlin is exempt from that because he does have the two victories. So the implication is kind of far-fetched. We've always believed that win and you're in, but we've seen it. We're coming close to it again this year. It is possible. A win does not lock you in. So I think that's what people were taking issue with, the fact that we say one thing, but technically – it is not true. A win does not guarantee you to be in the playoffs yet at this point. So I understand both sides to it. It's just a, I don't know how to say it, grammatical issue,
clickbait,
if you will. what's that?
Clickbait.
Yeah, you know, we haven't seen it yet, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. And we'll have to see over these next eight races. I'm one again this year. It just seems like it really could. I know I said that last year too, with and it would have been costly for Michael McDowell, as he would have been that one. Hate to be the driver that the first year it happens is the one with a victory on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I hate to see that happen as well. And you're right. Technically, it's true. There are eight more races left for the NASCAR Cup Series. So there is a chance that even though they have a win, but what would have to happen is that we've been talking about Kevin Harvick right now is below the cut line. He's 11th in the series point standing. Eric Almirola is out. He is 12th in the series points. But they neither one of them have a win. The next one's on that chopping block. If somebody below 16th gets another win, that would knock out Christopher Bell, and then Martin Truex Jr. is next in line to go below the cut line because they don't have wins. And then the last one without a win is Ryan Blaney, and he's second in the series point standings. I think he's safe at this point. It depends on what happens. So Denny Hamlin is below the cut line in 20th place. He has two victories. And Daniel Suarez is the other driver that is below the cut line. He's 17th with one race. And what's going to help Daniel Suarez, though, and Denny Hamlin, is that they have playoff points. They've got Daniel Suarez has the 5 points for the win. He also has two stage wins, giving him 7 playoff points. Denny Hamlin's in an even better position with 2 victories and 2 stage wins for 12 playoff points. So that's going to be part of what factors in to the resetting of the series point standings. There are drivers that are below them with playoff points. For instance, in 7th. So Ryan Blaney only has 5 playoff points. Martin Truex Jr. only 5 playoff points. Also, Austin Cindric only has 6 playoff points. So there are drivers below them that have fewer playoff points. So I think that may factor into this as well. So Daniel Suarez, let's see, the highest is 13th, and you have 3 drivers with 13 playoff points. You have 2 drivers with 12 playoff points. And then 7th, there are 5 drivers with 7 playoff points. So keep that in mind here as well, that those playoff points are going to factor into all of this as well. So just some other perspectives here that I don't think were brought out in that article. Tommy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. The beyond the flag, the post is still kind of questionable in my opinion. They labeled it definitely like that so that way people would click on it, and I understand that. But, I mean, technically, I mean, y'all are right. Suarez would need 2 wins to be locked in, but he does have 1 win, which does pretty much – mean that he could be in the playoffs. But now there are 5 or 6 races left before the playoffs, and there could be 3 or 4 more winners, which would definitely make it more interesting, and then there would be somebody that would be the odd man out to miss the playoffs if there are 17 winners or 16 winners. So not safe, but really close to being safe is how I would say Suarez. And I don't know. I would have labeled the article a little bit different than, even though with the win, Suarez isn't guaranteed or something like that, because definitely just seemed like a clickbait thing to me. But that's my opinion. You guys are right, though. I mean, we could have three or four more winners, and he could be the odd man out. But, you know, we'll see. We've got Daytona coming up. That's always interesting, and I can't wait. That's only a month away now in August. Pocono's coming up soon. I think Watkins Glen and the road course. I mean, there's still some opportunities for so many other drivers to win. So who knows how this is going to work out. But for now, I would definitely say that Suarez, he can relax for now. But if a few other guys start winning, I'd get nervous.
Your thoughts? Did we lose Jay?
No, I'm here. Okay. Calling it the clickbait, I mean, that's the intent of the headline of an article or whatever you're putting out there as the front page for that reason. So I don't blame them for what they're putting. And, you know, it appears I get, as you all know, I get frustrated with people that want to tear things apart. I mean, what they're saying is true and factual. If you know how the system works,
they don't include all of the information.
But that's what you got to get into the article then, which is their goal. That's their goal, is to get you onto their page via whatever they're promoting. You know, the headline of the article. That's the reason for it. Once you get into it, you understand what they're saying is truthful and backed up. I know we've had some in the past that. From that site specifically that have been questionable of not providing the information once you're into the article. I think in this one they certainly do, though, and we are backing it up with what we've talked about here tonight. So I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with the people that just want to right away throw up a red flag and berate somebody for what they're doing when it's truth. I mean, that's what it comes down to. What the headline says is truthful. He is not locked into the playoffs at this point. So how can you argue it? Could it have been worded differently? Certainly. But it did its job in got people onto the site and looking at it and talking about it. So I know the fact that it's
Daniel
Suarez.
That's why I
still
like to talk about their articles.
Right. Yeah, I know. And there have been some in the past, I would have to agree, Sharon, that as we talked about them, it's like they had no meat with that behind the headline and truth and facts to back it up, that it was more opinionated or questionable as to whether or not it was truthful and factual.
And I think
in this case,
I do a case with this article because they omit some information.
Okay, I felt like they did provide the facts to back it up, but that's a different perspective, I guess. And the fact, I guess maybe, I take that back, maybe it is that it's not fully in the article, but I'm aware of what the system is, so my own knowledge is being applied to the article, I guess. So that could be true. You're right, for a casual fan, maybe that it's not enough information to back up what the headline says. Certainly could have been done differently. But the reality is, as we've talked about it all night, you know, Christopher Bell being eighth in points is at risk right now, as well as the next one up, you mentioned Martin Truex. And there may have been a better way to go about it, especially starting with the headline of putting it as it's possible that Daniel Suarez doesn't make it in, even just to lead down that road. But it's certainly not one I thought should have caused as big a storm as it did on Twitter, but nowadays I feel like anything you do does. So that's my two cents.
Okay. And I get where you're coming from. I get where you're coming from. When you write an article, you want people to come to your page to read what it is that you have to say. I get all of that. And some articles do that very, very well. I just don't think that they do very well at that particular location. I think that they information sometimes and don't always give the full picture. And for the casual viewer, Yes, that is going to be an issue because they're basing their opinion based on partial information. I do think that there are other drivers that might be more vulnerable than Daniel Suarez, who has the 7 playoff points. The reason Kevin Harvick and Eric Almirola are so vulnerable is they have no stage wins at all. They have 0 playoff points. Same thing with Christopher Bell. He has 0 playoff points. The next drivers that are going to be vulnerable are those drivers that have just the 5 playoff points, and that's Martin Truex Jr. and Ryan Blaney, who sits in 2nd. I think that's going to be a huge story if Ryan Blaney gets cut out of this. Daniel Suarez has, in addition to the win, he has stage wins. So he has 7 less vulnerable. So I do think that they're not giving the complete picture on that story. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out and if it is going to be a factor. But I do think it's raising an alarm and identifying Daniel Suarez as a driver who is more vulnerable than a driver like Christopher Bell or the other 2 drivers that I mentioned who are equally vulnerable or even more vulnerable than Daniel Suarez is. So that's just my 2 cents worth on that. So, Tommy, your thoughts.
Sharon, if you didn't see in a message there, Tommy said his call dropped. I don't think you can call back in after 9:30, correct?
No, 10:30.
Okay.
Eastern.
Or 10:30 Eastern,
okay.
Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, his call dropped.
So, Tommy. Okay. Okay, so I guess we'll have to leave it at that. But, Jay, any other topics you want to bring up?
Well, I know I told him we'd probably only have 1 more if that based on time. Real quick one here I think should be rather short. I know my opinion on it is RFK has dropped their appeal. They had crew members being suspended due to a loose wheel, which we have seen throughout the year. And our new listener, Jared Hudson, said that was his one hot topic. He doesn't like the single lug nut. And I know the tire that we've discussed the tire issue, but they have dropped their appeal with that. And I'll wait and give my opinion on it here in a second. But that should be a quick one here to wrap up the night.
Well, I think that that's smart. I think that RFK did the right thing by dropping their appeal. We've had several appeals of the lug nut situation, and NASCAR has made it very clear. Everybody is equipment, and we pointed it out. Several teams have done it well, and they're not having these issues. It seems like there are some teams that haven't figured it out, and they're the teams that are having the issue. So I do think that they really have to look at their process that they have in place and what do they need to be doing differently to be more successful at getting that lug nut on. I think NBC did a really good segment on the single lug nut and exactly what teams need to be doing. And they showed exactly what they need to watch for when they're putting that lug nut on. Like I say, what did we say? About 10 situations so far this season, and that seems like a lot. But when you think about how many stops there are, how many teams there are, and how many races, 18 races so far, or is it 16? No, it's 18 races. 18 races that we've had so far this season, and, you know, several pit stops throughout the course of a race. It seems to me that that ten, you know, when you put it in perspective, 10 is really not that many. So I do think that those teams that are having the issues, it puts the onus on them to really take a closer look. I have more of an issue with the fact that the penalty that they give does not seem to be effective because we talked about how the crew chief for Kyle Larson is sitting in the race center at Hendrick Motorsports, still being a part of what's happening at the racetrack and giving his input. I think the penalty is more of an issue than the teams, whether or not the teams are appealing it or not. And so far, of all of the appeals that have taken place, I think not many have. I think RFK at the very beginning said that they thought they had a better idea for that lug nut, and NASCAR did end up incorporating that idea, which was a good thing. I'm not disputing that, but I think in most of the cases, in the other 9 cases or whatever, they've all agreed that the ownership was on the part of the team itself, and they have to look at what they're doing to do it better. So, Jay, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, the deal with RFK early in the year, though, wasn't the wheel coming off during the race that caused that penalty. That was modifying the rim or the lug nut,
one of the two.
I don't remember which.
You're right.
Before it went on. So that was kind of a separate deal. I don't believe that any of the appeals for the actual loose wheel have been successful. There were a couple that I thought might actually be. My issue, I know, Sharon, you talked about the penalty, and we agree on that, that that's not effective and they need to do something different with the crew chief still running the team. My issue here is, being that the track record, whatever it is, 10, 11, 12, that have failed, they appeal it. They even talked about it on the broadcast on Sunday. That was a manipulation of it. If you appeal, you don't lose that those team members, starting with the crew chief, until the appeal is heard. They intentionally did it, kept the crew chief for that race. They felt like they had a really good shot at winning that race. So once that race was over, they were willing to take the loss during the next 4, but they wanted the team together for that specific race. So there is my problem, is they manipulated the rule. They had no intention of fighting this all the way through under the appeal. They just wanted them there for Road America, the road course race. And that's where I have the problem. Did they do something legally wrong? No, they manipulated the rule though, because they had no intention of it.
Correct. And I agree. I think that that is an issue. I think more so than the single lug nut. A lot of these teams have figured it out. These other teams need to really spend the time to figure it out for their team. And that's where I stand on that. NASCAR has made it really clear as well that this is the way they're going forward. And the teams have to figure it out. So, like you said, none of those appeals have really been successful for that reason. I don't know what else to say with regard to that. I have a problem with the manipulation of the rule in order to benefit their team. And I do think the NASCAR needs to look at that. I think that's more of a hot topic than the lug nut itself.
You're right, and I am still not particularly a fan of the single lug nut, but the change has been made. We're dealing with it. The only reason it's been a story has been because of the few instances you mentioned. But again, four tires per car, per pit stop, per race, it really hasn't been an issue, other than in the past, if you had 3 or 4 lug nuts on and you could feel it coming loose, you had time to get to pit road and get it taken care of before the wheel came off. But you're right. NASCAR said, hey, there is no excuse. You know if there's an issue, we'll help you with it, but we're not going to give you a slide there, a waiver when it happens, because it is being successfully done majority of the time. The only two, and I'm trying to remember which two teams it was. I think it was Justin Haley's was one, and I believe Kyle Larson's, because on the road course, I felt like maybe some of the damage done during the race, whether it was his fault or not, being off course, that on a road course or hitting the wall, damage to the wheel might have caused it to not the lack of getting the lug nut on right. But those two also did not go by NASCAR, so they're saying, hey, you know, that's if it's that bad that we feel race damage did it, we might take a look at it. But neither one of those did they buy that. So, I don't see anybody getting by with it. Like I said, my issue was the fact that they talked about it during the broadcast. They kind of made it public that their intent was to have him there for that race. That was their best. They felt their best shot, and he did finish in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand it. And by the rule book, technically it was not wrong, but it's public knowledge. They manipulated the rule.
Basically, that's exactly what they did. And right now, the way the rule's written, they can do that. But I do think NASCAR needs to look at it. Okay, we're at the end of our time here on Hot Topic Sound Off. So, Jay, let's go ahead and to our across the table instead of our round table. We lost Tommy. Did he come out with a comment here?
I was just going to look at that real quick. I didn't see him respond on that or not. Does not look like it. And
okay.
I think Sharon, you might have it handy if you want to give his Twitter account there when it comes back. But mine is MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram, Michael Hoosman on Facebook. Coming up for the week, obviously be back on Thursday night for the preview of Atlanta and then Mid-Ohio for a preview show on Thursday. And it looks like I'm off for the weekend, so who knows what I'm going to do over the weekend yet. I just found out I was off for the weekend. I didn't know. Wasn't in my plans. I don't know what this off day is about. So I'll have to see what I can get into.
What's up with that? Okay. Well, I know you'll be back Thursday night.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a sprint car race, and they're saying shortage of tires is why they had to pull the show. So we'll just leave it at that.
Supply chain. Okay. Tommy is Tommy_C24 at Since95Fan, and one of the things Tommy does that is so cool is he's got quite a collection of diecasts, and every day he comes out with his diecast showing today's date. So I really enjoy that because I see some diecasts that I have some paint schemes that I haven't seen in quite a while, and it takes you down memory lane when he does that every day. So really enjoy what Tommy is doing with that.
It does indeed give you some flashbacks, doesn't it?
It does. I am Fanfor Racing Site on Twitter. We are Fanfor Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com. And we do have our player there so that you can listen to the live broadcast or to the podcast afterwards. And we really hope that you enjoy listening to the show as much as we enjoy doing the show. So a big shout-out to our listeners for taking the time to tune in. And a shout-out to our new listener tonight, Jay. Thank you for bringing him to the show. And I appreciate the interaction with him through the show here as well. Any other fans, if you do want to interact with us, we are always on Twitter. And just shoot us a line if you comment about what we're talking about. And we're happy to give you a shout-out here on the show. Again, thanks. What was his name again, Jay?
Jared Hudson works with the Southern Dirt Track Report. They also, and that's why normally I'd say he's not able to listen. We're on Tuesday night. They have their own Thursday night podcast as well on the 110 Nation. So works with Chris Knight.
Okay. Oh, okay. Very cool. So very nice that he interacted here with us tonight. We appreciate that. And Definitely looking forward to doing our preview show that's coming up this weekend. We will be racing two tracks this weekend, Road America and Atlanta. So you have, I said Road America, I mean Mid-Ohio for the ARCA Menards Series and the Truck Series, but the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series will be racing at Atlanta Motor Speedway this weekend. So we'll preview all of that on Thursday night. And a shout-out to our Fan for Racing crew. First of all, Jay, for you for standing in for Sal, who is on vacation tonight, and to Tommy for tuning in and helping us out with our Hot Topics conversation here tonight as well. So with that, I think we're ready to call it a night, unless I missed something.
No, I don't think so. We will talk to you on Thursday as we get ready to preview the next upcoming weekend. Have a good night.
Starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time here at Fan for Racing Radio. Good night, everybody.